This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
Prototype people, rigid suit trolls near brain dead, under for spacious skies gathering storm clouds, rule of law, a falling axe in stormtroopers' hands, cruel class deceivers claim God for their sign, making up stories with places for meanings to hide. Dracula drinks deeply while nourishing his trap, the love of mankind in alluring narcotic rap.
Fable.
Sex Fable does love, sex is life, and sex meant death. Homosexual needles.
And good morning, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland, and we've got a very special guest. As always, our guests are special. This guest has been on my program a couple times already. We welcome back Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, scholar and activist. Before we bring her on, let me just give a brief introduction. Coming off her powerful and acclaimed An Indigenous People's History of the United States, which won the American Book Award and the Penn Oakland Josephine Miller Award for Excellence in Literature, and has sold quite a few copies, which is encouraging. Ortiz has teamed up with award-winning Native journalist Dina Gilio Whitaker to unmask the pervasive myths that have accompanied European colonization of Indigenous, quote, America. The book is called All the Real Indians Died Off and 20 Other Myths About Native Americans. Not even out in the bookstores yet. It's on sale October 4th. So you'll have an opportunity to get some copies of that book as we go through the program here. Each of the 21 chapters tackles a different aspect of the false narrative that has misinformed and misled generations. The book comes at a really interesting moment as the uprising against the Dakota Access Bakken oil pipeline itself gives the lie to many of the myths the book discusses and is educating new generations about Indigenous realities. There is numerous synchronicities. Dunbar Ortiz made her mark in Native American scholarship with the Great Sioux Nation, Sitting in Judgment of America, came out in 1977, a book that at its time became a fundamental text in Indigenous studies. And it is that same Great Sioux Nation, or, pardon my pronunciation, Otsete Tsakuyin, Seven Fires Council, that many say is being reborn in the crucible of the struggle going on in the Dakotas. So it's an interesting time to interview Roxanne. Once again, welcome back, Roxanne.
Thank you, Paul, for inviting me for a preview of the book.
Yeah, it's actually the second time in a few weeks I've talked about books that haven't even come out in the bookstores yet. And I just want to mention that what we heard there was John Trudell and his band with Fables and Other Realities, released in 1991. And I played that both because it's a great song and because you dedicate this book to John Trudell. So did you know John?
Yes. We both, my co-author and I, Dina and I, both knew John and over many years. And he passed away while we were working on the book. And we felt you know, kind of, we knew, you know, he was ill. He was dying for a while. So just in that context, I think his words and his life really inspired us, you know, as we were writing. So we dedicated the book to him.
And, of course, I just can't help but think of his longtime singer and sidekick, Quilt Man, who's been out there in North Dakota at the camp for, for I don't know, probably going on several weeks with his son, Tiwani. It's quite an amazing situation. We might be able to talk about some about that as well. But first, you mentioned your co-author. What talk a little bit about your co-author, Dina Giglio Whitaker.
Well, Dina is she has a master's degree in American Studies, but she's a researcher and a professional writer and researcher on indigenous issues, very serious research with the Center for World Indigenous Studies. And she's been a columnist for Indian Country Today, Media Network, and others. She's a great writer, a great person, very involved in Indian affairs. She's very knowledgeable of things I, you know, being a historian, don't pay as much attention to the nitty gritty kind of legal issues of Indian Country, so it's a very good mix. I mean, it was really wonderful working with her. She's also one of the very few Native surfers in the world that aren't Hawaiian, you know. North American Native surfers, and she's done that since she's very young, and she's quite a pro, and she's married to a professional surfer, and so she lives in San Clemente near the waves in California.
I guess if you're a surfer, you kind of have to. Interesting. So so she'll be with you, I understand, right, when you come to town in November 10th at Powell's Books?
Yes, definitely. We'll both be there.
And hopefully we'll get her on the airwaves somewhere around that time if it works out. Yes, so let's so I know there's kind of a series of these myths about books. I think maybe labor, and I don't know, there's been some others. Did they approach you, or how did the book come about?
Well, you know, this is a Beacon Press book. My previous book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States, was published by Beacon Press and was a part of a series on different perspectives on United States history. They have one on queer history of the United States and one on disabled people's history of the United States, and others are in the work, African American history. So they had invited me to write the Indigenous Peoples one on the recommendation of Howard Zinn, who kind of worked with them on this idea. They published Howard Zinn's initial publication of the People's History of the United States in 1980. They're in Boston. They're owned by the Unitarian Universalist Church. So it's an absolutely amazing press. So my editor for that book also started another series called 21 Myths and Myth-Busting. Myth-Busting, that's hard to say, series. So they have one on labor. I think the name of it is They're Bankrupting Us and 20 Other Myths About Labor Unions. Bill Fletcher Jr. wrote that, and one on immigrants. They're Taking Our Jobs and 20 Other Myths About Immigration by Aziza Chomsky, Noam Chomsky's daughter, who works on immigration. So it's a very good company to be in. Ours is the third one. So it was kind of a natural, you know, to do it, but I felt it's not, you know, the kind of book I usually write. It's somewhat more journalistic and I felt I needed, you know, I needed a partner, and I immediately thought of Dina because her work is just so useful, and she's also very fast and good writer, being, you know, having written a lot journalistically. So that's how it came to be. It's actually just not even 2 years ago that we started the project, so it's out pretty quickly as books go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small book, you know, it's meant to be a kind of, you don't have to read it consecutively, you can read different chapters, and teachers can pull out different chapters, and we tried to make them holistic enough that they made sense, you know. So it's designed for everyone who wants, say you know people you just want to explain a few things to, and it's just so complicated, and having them read a whole bunch of different books, and they're not going to do it probably, just hand them this book, and they can read it easily in a few hours, or read parts of it and get something out of it. So it's that kind of book, and I think it's very extremely useful. You know, with my other book, you really need to read the whole thing, you know, to get the thesis, and that's how many books are. So this is a little different audience, but I think it'd be useful to anyone who teaches or wants to learn something, like what's going on right now in North Dakota, Standing Rock. It's not that we have the historical background precisely for that event, but in reading this, you get the larger picture of why that's happening and what the stakes are.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as a longtime activist journalist, and sometimes more activist, I've always, been very involved through the years with the supporting Native American struggles, and always somewhat concerned at the lack of more general support given by the left or progressives. And I think, you know, part of it has to do with exactly the, you know, unconsciously or consciously buying in to the narrative and not really understanding, the realities, but also the importance of indigenous struggles, and which I personally have always seen as somewhat central. You know, now there's sort of a younger generation that's sort of using at least the language of decolonization, and in some cases putting into practice. And certainly there's a lot of people going there and supporting that struggle as they have other struggles. And I think this is an interesting time for a book like this to come out, and for people to really take a really hard look at this history, and not just at the history, but as you lay it out in these book, these central myths of the establishment of the United States as a nation that sort of, you know, set the groundwork for everything that's come since.
Yeah, and it is really heartening to see the interest being paid by the, you know, various movements, Black Lives Matter, environmentalists, who are, of course, more apt to be interested in the issue, but still, they're not leading it. And in general, they try to get Indians to support what they do, and they kind of come in and want to run things because they know how to do it. And this time, they had no choice but to come in and learn how Native people have survived for 500 years, the kind of narrative that they don't really know how to communicate with the general public. And I think they're learning. I hope they're learning. I'm sure they can't help but if they're there. And it's very heartening that for the first time, the labor unions There's an argument because AFL-CIO put out this nasty little, you know, executive statement by Trumka, how, you know, the jobs were more important. This is all ridiculous and no one understands it, and it should just be ignored, and, you know, just really nasty. And so many of the member unions and individual members, of course, and the caucuses within are just blasting the leadership for this. And so they're arguing with each other, but at least the topic of Native American rights is coming up. And what this means about jobs, I mean, a lot of those jobs, you know, Native people themselves have those jobs there. You know, so it's, yeah, you know, some sacrifices have to be made when there's injustice taking place, you know, that workers have to get back to, you know, the sense of solidarity and sacrifice and mutual aid and not this selfish, you know, their next contract and where can I get my next job, whether it's, you know, making bombs or digging up, you know, transporting tar sands that's going to poison all the water. When does it stop, you know? And they have to take responsibility too, workers and unions as well. It can't just be Native peoples, you know, trying desperately to hold on to a small amount of land base that they fought like hell to, or just, you know, making it unlivable. It used to be taking it away, and now it's just making it unlivable. Is just another form of genocide.
You know, maybe it's also perhaps forcing labor individuals, the chapters, entire unions to get back to the broader critique that really was the labor movement, you know, 100
some
years
of them
ago.
Already have been, like the nurses. Nurses United, which is a member of AFL-CIO, they've been in the forefront. You know, Michael Moore has featured them in SICKO, and they've been, they were supporting Bernie Sanders. They really blasted the AFL-CIO. They had already made a statement. This is probably one reason AFL-CIO sort of saw things getting out of their hands, you know, because several unions, the Amalgamated Workers Union and Nurses United and one other one had early on, you know, just
the communications workers.
Yeah, the communication workers. And so I think that's, you know, partially what they wanted to nip it in the bud, but instead it's just created this, I mean, it's divisive, but in a good way, because these things need to be discussed within unions. And I end to see arguments going on all over the country, and I said, this is something that has never happened before. And it's happened in other places, all throughout Latin America. In Canada, trade unions have been, in Australia, trade unions have been the main solidarity people with Native struggles. And it's just, you know, that's why we don't even get near real transformation in the society, is that this, you know, you can go through the whole history of it, how labor solidarity is just, you know, completely destroyed over time. But it has to be rebuilt, and there are some building blocks, you know, that... also, these associations, there are about five of them, Asian American workers. I mean, they're in different unions, but they're ones that are all under the syndicate, you know, the syndicate of the AFL-CIO, as my union is, my teachers' union. They have their different constituency organizations, and about six different constituency organizations, which are huge, you know, millions of people each. They have all made, they jointly made a very strong statement objecting to the AFL-CIO.
I'm really glad you got into that, because that was actually one of the main questions I had planned to ask you about. So it's good we got into this, a really important conversation. Another really important conversation is the one that we've been having for the past week and a half or so here at KBOO during our membership drive, which is about how you can support, why it's important to support KBOO, this radio station. As Roxanne knows, who's been on, I'm sure, many, many community radio stations over the years that have given her an outlet for talking about the books that she writes, the important issues that she puts out there herself through her medium of writing. And so we're here, and we're joined by my fellow talk show host, Joe Uris.
Yes, I am a fellow talk show host. And I am really anxious that we get a bunch of calls right now. I want to thank some people. I want to thank Kyle and Kathy and two Johns. We got two Johns, all of whom are renewed memberships, all of whom understand the value of KBOO. And really, where else are you going to hear conversations about the Native American situation? All the Real Indians Died Off is available for a $75 minimum pledge. It includes that plus 20 other myths about Native Americans by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Dina Helio Whitaker. It's critically deconstructing myths about American Indians, and it's very important. A lot of us don't realize how victimized we are by stereotypes, and this is a chance to read a book that deconstructs all of that nonsense. And, you know, $75. It's a really good deal.
And less it hasn't even come out in the bookstores.
Yeah. You know, come on. It's really, really a significant contribution to the ending of stereotypes around Native peoples. I want to see a lot of you getting this book. And the best way to get it right now, right here, is to make a contribution of $75 or more dollars. You can do it in monthly allotments. You can do it, I don't know, you can do it in all kind of way. But in order to do it, you got to call. And in order to call, you got to call 877-500-5266. Now, that's a long number, so I'm going to repeat it. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Let these phones ring. Let the glory begin. And online, in the security and secrecy of your own home, KBOO.FM. Do that now. Feel good about that. And know that this station that brings you true news, this station that brings you great music, this station that really cares about the community and serves the community, will prosper. Without your support, let's face it, this place would be a dead end. Don't let that happen. Don't let this station fail. Make it successful by making a contribution. It doesn't matter how much you give. It's the principle involved. Of course, more is better. But if you can give $75, we can give you this book, All the Real Indians Died Off, and 20 other silly stereotypes at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266 and KBOO.FM. If you do that now, you'll feel good all day, or maybe all week, or maybe all the rest of your life. This is an opportunity of unprecedented significance. 877-500-5266.
And thank you, Joe, and thank you to all those who have called. Thank you to those who will call. I really want to express my thanks to those who called and supported this program and KBOO last week during my show. We exceeded our goal, and we'd like to exceed our goal this week as well. We're running, I think, just a little bit behind on this membership drive, so you could really help us catch back up and end on a really high note as the drive winds down in a few days. I really can't emphasize enough the importance of these talk show programs to stimulate debate and discussion in the Portland community and beyond. You know, they really do have an effect. I interviewed LaDonna Allard from the Sacred Stones camp a month ago before Amy Goodman. It kind of helped stir the pot, as it were. It helped stir the alternative media pot, and it kind of stirs things up all the way, sometimes even to the major media. You never know. You know, it's like the flapping of a butterfly, as it were. You just never know. You can't be attached to results in this game. You just have to put things out there and see where they lead. And sometimes things happen. You know, Amy Goodman, her reporting was just amazingly impactful. She was there at the right place at the right time. And KBOO tries to be here at the right place at the right time. So give us a call at 877-500-5266 and get a copy of this book. Let's get back to our conversation with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. I just want to, you know, name a few of these. Some of them will probably be pretty obvious to people. Are you still there, Roxanne? Oh, I better let me just give this number to Kathleen, or she's coming to get it, because I had the number. I called her. Yes, that's community radio. We are spontaneous. We'll have Roxanne back on the line in a jiffy here. Let me just read some of these titles. I said some of them will be perhaps obvious. Columbus discovered America. Thanksgiving proves the Indians welcome pilgrims. I just read that myself last night. You can kind of pick and choose. They're relatively short chapters, you know, about 6 to 10, 12 pages each. And each one is sort of a little capsule deconstruction, as Joe mentioned. Indians were savage and warlike. Europeans brought civilization to backward Indians. The United States did not have a policy of genocide. Sports mascots honor Native Americans. Most Indians are on government welfare. Oh gosh, you hear that, especially when people are protesting. You hear that all the time. Indian casinos make them all rich. Go to a reservation. Indians are naturally predisposed to alcoholism. So these are some of the myths, and there's a number of others that are analyzed, picked apart, deconstructed, and destroyed by this book. You know, you may think you already know all this, but I assure you, you don't. So I really encourage you to pick up a copy of this book and call us at 877-500-5266. You know, we're talking about the unions. You know, the SEIU local came out with a statement. There was a rally last week, and they made a statement in support of Standing Rock. I believe it was Section 403. I could be wrong about that. Maybe someone wants to call in. This is a call-in show. Obviously, it's membership drive, so it's kind of abbreviated. But the number to call in is 503-231-8187. If you have something to add to this debate about labor and indigenous people, this is a crucial one, and it couldn't be more crucial in this era of accelerating climate change and the struggle to get us off of fossil fuels before they kill us all. And so, you know, this Dakota Access Pipeline struggle is just emblematic and symbolic and real in terms of its crucial importance for all these struggles. And this book, as I said, All the Real Indians Died Off and 20 Other Myths About Native Americans, is really a perfect book for the moment we're in. So get a copy. And we are talking to the author, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. Are you back with us? Not yet. We're still waiting, having some problem getting Roxanne back on the line. I'm not sure what that difficulty is, but hopefully we'll overcome it. In the meantime, I just want to mention something that's coming up today, just in an hour and a half. There's a demonstration and press conference at the state capitol in Salem today from 10 a.m. to noon to protect Oxbow Spring and block the Nestle water grab in the Columbia River Gorge. If anybody heard my report last night, this is our own, among many other, crucial struggle, uniting environmentalists, and other concerned citizens and non-citizens for that matter, and Native people that are, you know, people think it's over since the voters in Hood River blocked commercial water bottling operations in Cascade Locks. But the state of Oregon is letting this water exchange, which is a linchpin of this process, to continue to go through for some strange reason, even though the bottling plant itself would be illegal. So public is encouraged to join in support of Anna Mae Leonard, tribal member and activist, in a five-day fast to symbolize the struggle of the fishing people of the four Columbia River tribes. I know there's people driving down. I myself am driving down. Heck, if you want, I got spaces. If you want to ride, I'll be leaving from KBOO in a bit. So you can call and get in on that even. But we have Roxanne back in line. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi. Sorry, we lost contact.
It happens. So yeah, I just
wanted to endorse, you know, what you were saying about KBOO and other alternative media, how important it is that we support it, because, you know, this this encampment began in April, and basically it was just, you know, only known, you know, through a Facebook page, and we just couldn't get any, you know, any interest in it. And it was really the alternative media, like KBOO, and, well, you know, Amy Goodman kind of jumped in after it was already an issue, you know, and out in the public, and people were going there. But then the national media did jump in. So if we didn't have that, there would never be any information disseminated from top down. So it's just essential to support KBOO.
Indeed. There's some kind of noise going on in the background there. I'm not sure what that is.
Well, I live in San Francisco.
Indeed. That could be a whole other conversation, but not today. I think we had a call-in, but maybe you want to read a little bit from your book while we have a little bit of time here. You had maybe a section from your introduction. You want to read a paragraph or two?
Yeah, this is sort of sums up what we're trying to do in the book. So I'll just read a little bit of the introduction. So most U.S. citizens' knowledge about Indians is inaccurate, distorted, or limited to elementary school textbooks, cheesy old spaghetti westerns, or more contemporary films like Dances with Wolves or The Last of the Mohicans. Few can name more than a handful of Native nations out of the over 500 that still exist, or can tell you who Leonard Peltier is, or John Trudell, or almost anyone. Mention Indian gaming, and they will have very strong opinions about it one way or another, none of which is accurate. Some might even have an Indian casino in their community, but they will probably be curiously incurious if you ask them how Indian gaming came to be, or about the history of the nation that owns the casino. And in many parts of the country, it's not uncommon for non-Native people to have never met a Native person, or to assume that there are no Indians who live among them. On the other hand, in places where there is concentration of Natives, like in reservation border towns, what non-Native people think they know about Indians is typically limited to racist tropes about drunk or lazy Indians. They are seen as people who are maladjusted in the modern world and cannot free themselves from their tragic past. On the whole, it can be said that the average U.S. citizen's knowledge about American Indians is confined to a collection of well-worn myths and half-truths that have Native people either not existing at all, or existing in a way that fails to live up to their expectations of who real Indians are. If Indians do exist, they are seen as mere shadows of their former selves, making counterfeit identity claims or performing fraudulent acts of Indianness that are no longer authentic or even relevant. non-natives then position themselves either wittingly or unwittingly as being the true experts about Indians and their histories. And it happens at all levels of the society, from the undereducated all the way up to those with advanced college degrees and even in the halls of Congress. The result is the perpetual erasure of Indians from the U.S. political and cultural landscape. In short, for five centuries, Indians have been disappearing in the collective imagination. They are disappearing in plain sight.
That's just wonderful. And that's from the book All the Real Indians Died Off, in quotes, one of the chapters in this book, and 20 other myths about Native Americans. And that can be yours for a $75 contribution. But before we go back to talking about our membership, we do have an important caller. I believe her name is Catherine, who was at the rally where Carolyn, sorry, where the SEIU made their statement. Go ahead, Carolyn. You're on the air.
I was actually, sir, at the board meeting.
Oh, okay.
Which determined that SEIU is not only supporting this movement, but is contributing a fair chunk of change to it. And I think that's important that people know that SEIU 503 is a statewide organization is supporting the Native American community and doing its best to get their contribution into the hands of the people who can actually use it.
Hey, so while we got you on the line, are you privy to any wider conversations that Roxanne was talking about, this debate that has erupted within labor about this issue?
I wish I was. I think labor needs to coordinate its efforts as a unified force to deal with the elements that are trying to put labor as a whole down and neutralize it.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling, Catherine. And
Carolyn,
my family
does the same thing, so don't sweat it.
Okay, thank you. And so, Roxanna, this is something, again, a conversation. You know, I know that you are a radical activist, a revolutionary activist in the heyday. To those of us who sometimes look at it as the heyday, I guess every moment should be we should make every moment the heyday instead of looking at any time in the past as a sort of that's our own mythologizing tendency, I guess. But what does this moment look like to you in terms of the struggle? I know you were involved also in supporting Indigenous struggles, along with like the International Indian Treaty Council, I believe, or anyway, you were involved in some of these movements as the Indigenous struggle sort of evolved from the AIM days. Were you at the meeting in Standing Rock? I guess it was 1974.
I was not at the founding meeting in Standing Rock in 1974. I had a few months later, I got involved. I was more involved in the Southwest with my research and activism. And I got invited to be an expert witness at the Sioux Nation Treaty hearing in Lincoln, Nebraska. That's what Great Sioux Nation came out of. And so the people who had formed the Treaty Council were there. And it was the first I even knew about it because it was, it really came out of, it was quite a few nations that were involved, but none of them from the Southwest, initially. So, the movement was very large all over the place. Alcatraz brought people together. Wounded Knee had happened the year before. But amazingly, only two or three individuals from the Southwest, like New Mexico, Arizona, Oklahoma, were actually involved. So there was this sort of the dominance of the Northern Plains and the Haudenosaunee and the Ojibwe people of the Anishinaabe of the Great Lakes area were prominent. So I got invited to be an expert witness, and I said, you know, I don't know anything about the Treaty of 1868. This is not my field of study. And Vine de Loria said, give me an armload of stuff to read this, and then you'll know. So that's what brought me in to... I had written my dissertation on the history of land tenure in New Mexico from pre-colonial times to the present. So it was, you know, just totally different culture, nation, you know. There's no real such thing as Native American or American Indian. There's these very unique nations, you know, with a certain thread, because of colonialism, the thread of resistance, but they're very particular, and that's really the beauty of it. So when there's this coming together and this kind of federation like it's happening now, it's really a powerful dynamic with AIM, with the American Indian Movement. And then I got very involved with AIM and became a member of the AIM Council in San Francisco. With AIM, there was more of a homogenization, but there was always this strong leadership from, you know, Standing Rock and Pine Ridge and White Earth, Anishinaabe in Minnesota. The main leaders were all from there, the Means brothers and the Bellecourt brothers and Dennis Banks. So it kind of homogenized other people. But what's happening now is this beautiful mutual respect, and I think a lot of that has come out of the international indigenous movement. That the Treaty Council started. Treaty Council was really American Indian Movement under COINTELPRO and tremendous repression, founding another institution and taking that and building upon it internationally.
We gotta go to a break, and that's we'll get back to that conversation. It dovetails with what was on Democracy Now! This morning, that the chairman of the Standing Rock Tribe, David Archambault, is actually appealing to the United Nations. So it all kind of comes full circle.
In Geneva, right?
Yeah. So we are in our membership drive. We are our own kind of both disseminating and unifying force here in Portland and beyond. We are in our membership drive, and we're asking you to join in with a $250 matching grant. Joe Uris, how are things going in Membership Central?
Well, they're going well, but they could be going better. Hey, listen, I don't think we emphasize this enough. Some kind soul or organization is donating $250 matching grant. What does that mean to you? That means every dollar you give goes toward that $250 matching grant. If you've been waiting to give at the appropriate moment, this is the appropriate moment. This is the time when you make your contribution count for much more than it would normally. Yeah, $250 is a chunk of change. So won't you now, if you haven't done it yet, or if you've done it and you want to up it, now's the time to make a contribution. $250 matching grant, that's a hunk of change, really. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. That's what you need to call to talk to our incredibly brilliant standing by folks on the phones. And of course, if you want to do it privately, here's your opportunity. KBOO.FM on the internets. Yes, sir. KBOO.FM. Now, this is not your usual radio station. If you're just tuning in, if you're new to KBOO, we are a listener-supported station. We fly by our own wings. We don't have any corporate sponsorship. We don't have a hunk of money from big, 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 big gift givers. We depend on ordinary folks like you. A $250 matching grant is an incredibly big thing for us. Let's make sure that is reached. Let's make sure that happens. This is the time for you to do that. You give whatever you can. The easiest way to give, of course, is a 5, 10, or whatever amount per month from your bank account. You'll never feel it. It'll be good, and you will feel good. KBOO.FM on the internet, or 877 500 800-500-5266.
That's and do we have any copies?
What? I'm sorry.
Do we have any copies of the book left?
We do. We do. I believe we do. Yes.
877-500-5266. You can get a copy of this book for a $75 contribution to the station.
Yeah.
The one we're talking about here today, live with on the phone with Roxanne Dunbar.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other swag that you can grab. It's really important to do this. I'm not here because I think it's really cool to hang out and talk on the radio. No, I'm really here because I think this is an extremely important community resource. And I think you do too, or you wouldn't be listening. So this is your opportunity to make your beliefs known. This is a $250 match, which is a great deal for us. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Online, very secure, KBOO.FM. You do that, you feel good all day, perhaps you feel good all week, or maybe even you feel good all the time. It's your opportunity to contribute to progressiveness, to contribute to community-supported radio, the best in music and the best in public affairs. And that's not hyperbole. That's really true. 877-500-5266.
And we're back. We're going to go to a brief announcement from the station, and then we'll be back.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Zell's Cafe, a breakfast and brunch spot at 1300 Southeast Morrison Street, serving baked salmon Benedict, German waffles, and more. Becoming a member is easy when you call 877-500-5266 today to support KBOO.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
And thanks to Pamela Santos, our membership director, and Lisa Loving, our PM News and Public Affairs director, for those announcements from the station. And we are back. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are in our membership drive, as you well know, and I'm speaking with Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, co-author with Dina Helio Whitaker of this important new book, again, which you can get for a $75 contribution if you call that number. All the Real Indians Died Off, in quotes, and 20 Other Myths About Native Americans. So I ran down while we were trying to get you on the phone some of the titles of these. Give us a sense for a couple of the chapters. What are some of the ones that kind of struck you the most first of all, did you kind of switch off on the chapters, or how do you write the book?
Well, you can imagine with all the myths about Indians, it was very hard to distill to 21. I think we could have written 1,000 much easier than 21. So we tried to, not be too esoteric about it. You know, some things that we, like the details about that would not really get to people who, would be a lot of things that I deal with. Hopefully this will lead people to read my other book and other books, amazing books out there by Native authors.
Yeah, you mentioned Vine Deloria, of course.
Of course, all of Vine Deloria, but there are young Native people writing now that it just blows my mind, the stuff they're doing. But it's they use Native, Native oral history. They use Native sources, and it's, just really amazing. But this, I think, would help dispel some of the most common myths. So we had, we each had our favorites, and then there were obvious ones like Columbus and Thanksgiving, and, we have a little bit different take than, say, The Lies My Teacher Told Me, that deals with, some of those kind of myths, too, in a very good way. But we tried to dig a little deeper. And, of course, the sports mascots honoring Native Americans. And some are more relevant to, say, people who live in the borderlands where there are many Native people, like Northern California, Oregon, Washington, the Southwest, you know, the Northern Plains, Oklahoma.
You know, I just want to interrupt. You know, you mentioned border towns earlier, borderlands. I think it's really hard for people, especially urban-centered people, to really understand, you know, just like it was and still remains difficult for people who don't live, you know, like, okay, say back in, you know, in the 50s and 60s, you know, people trying to understand the Deep South for African Americans. But it's really difficult, I think, for people to understand. I've gotten a little bit of a sense for it talking to Native people from reservations. But what it's like still today in those towns surrounding next to Native reservations, just the way the police deal with Native people. Yes. and everything.
Absolutely. It's sometimes very discouraging because so many of the same issues are even back before the movements in the 60s and 70s reversed some things, you know, like the horrible police brutality in Gallup and Farmington and Grants, you know, and these up in the Nebraska, South Dakota borderland. But even that is returning, you know, as police brutality in general has been militarized and returning in the last 20 years or so. So there's been, you know, a lot of rollback even from some steps that were made. People died, and that caused Larry Kasus, the Navajo activist, died in Gallup. Police killed him, just leading a demonstration, you know, for... So these are, you know, these border towns are, there's some analogies with, say, urban inner cities or African Americans. They're smaller towns than, you know, the big cities like that. But it's just, like, ghettoized, you know, and just a, I think it's very hard for people to imagine that this would be in 2016, such a an apartheid, you know, that just still functions, you know, absolutely. And in some places, like Oklahoma, there, you know, with because it was the place where they forcibly removed all of the people from all the people they could round up from east of the Mississippi, so it's, you know, like dozens and dozens of different Native nations there, and there are many, many, you know, multiple border towns. Almost every town's a border town in Oklahoma, and that's always when, you know, when Native Americans use that term, it's a negative term. It's not a geographical term. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, you know, San Francisco is a border town, Los Angeles, not just these, and Portland, and especially Seattle, where you have the main homeless population are Native Americans. Albuquerque, they get burned alive, they get tortured, they get killed by the police. So it's those conditions, you know, are very active. So this is, you know, the people who really, really need to understand. Of course, the younger people, we really want to read this book because their minds are open, and they really, this younger generation, it seems to me, has a real sense of justice and injustice. You know, it somehow has seeped into the culture from our 60s movements and from, you know, all kinds of directions, and even, you know, law that has been that those movements have forced into existence, that now is being called political correctness, and that all should be reversed. And that's pretty scary, you know, because things have been going downhill.
We need to break again. Sorry to break in. We're going to have to go to a longish break here now. We'll come back for a few minutes at the end.
Okay.
Thank you, Roxanne. I've been talking with Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz. And now we're talking to you directly to encourage you in the last 6 or 7 minutes of this program to call that number we've given you. We still have this $250 matching grant. The number is 877-500-5266. You know, we do our best to make the invisible visible on many different subjects, and this is one of them. And so, Joe.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really good.
Right on.
Hey, now is the moment. Now is the hour. This is the time, and this is the place. You all out there should know that we have a $250 match. That means every dollar you give is, you know, going toward that $250. It's possible that we could really reach a significant sum of money. You know, three times, maybe even four times a year, KBOO has to ask for money. It has to ask for money because the corporations are not asked for their support. We don't need no rich man's support. We need the support of people just like you, people who are listening to KBOO because they understand the importance of the news and the music that makes this station work. They understand what volunteer radio is all about. And you want to be part of that action. This is the chance of a lifetime. We want to thank Kelly in Salem. Wow, that's a bunch of money. Wow, this is really good. Hey, listen. It's not easy to ask you for money. I'm not by nature a pitch man, though I play one on the radio. And I do that because I really believe in KBOO. From 1968 to today, I have watched this station flourish and grow and be supported by people just like you. But it's not an easy task. It's not what I would call jolly fun. I make up things to say, but the reality is it's all dependent on folks just like you. And how do you do that? How do you make the station flourish? How do you make it continue? And how do you avoid what would be in its space? It would not be happy. So make a call right now, 877-500-5266. I may have said that too fast. Let me slow down. 877-500-5266. We're doing that for people like me who are kind of, you know, hearing impaired or whatever. And we want to remind you that online you can make a contribution quietly and sneakily, and nobody will know what happened. KBOO.FM. But, you know, you should really be proud of this station. We're unique, well, not quite unique, but rare in the United States. A lot of people's radio has had an enormous struggle over the last few years. But we not only have had a struggle and defeated problems that exist, but we have survived and flourished. And we know that you want this station to continue or you wouldn't be listening. Am I right? I'm right. Of course I'm right. Well, I mean, you sound like Trump. Ooh, ah, oh no. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266 or KBOO.FM. And remember, this is the middle of a $250 match. The dollars you give are working well beyond their actual numbers. So do this now. Feel good about yourself. Feel good about the station. Feel good about Portland. Feel good about the possibilities for this nation and the world, because you will have contributed to something that makes a difference. KBOO Radio, keeping you informed, keeping you entertained. 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM. This is such an opportunity for you, such a way to feel good. And again, 877-500-5266. Make a contribution now.
Thank you so much, Joe. And we are just about out of time. Roxanne, we really don't have any more time. I just want to reiterate that you're going to be in town on November 10th with your co-author, correct?
Yes, I look forward to seeing everyone there.
And we hope to talk to you again around that time. So thank you so much, Roxanne. Wish we had more time, but we'll have you back on again at some point.
Thank you, and good luck with the fun drive.
Thank you. That was Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, author of the brand new book, not even in bookstores yet, All the Real Indians Died Off and 20 Other Myths About Native Americans. Couldn't come at a better time. And a quick announcement, Solidarity Gathering Stand with Standing Rock this Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Southwest Ankeny and Southwest Park in the park box there. Gathering of Support and Unity, celebration of Portland's strides in supporting Standing Rock in their struggle to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. And there's a fundraiser for Standing Rock Monday, September 26th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Lewis and Clark Law School up there in the Southwest Hills. And lots more. Tomorrow, Evict the Landlord Lobby, National Renters Day of Action, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Meet at MLK Statue at Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard and Holiday Street. And much more, but we got to get out of here because we got someone else coming in to talk with you and at you. My name is Paul Rowland. Support KBOO 877-500-5266. This has been me with Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 13th annual Bike in Movie and Bike Ride for Peace, Saturday, September 24th. The Bike for Peace ride takes place from 4 to 6 p.m. and starts at the Northwest Hostel International at 425 Northwest 18th Avenue, across the Tillicum Crossing Bridge, and arriving at the Hawthorne Hostel at 6 p.m. There will be food, entertainment, and a screening of the documentary film Rising from Ashes about the first Rwandan national cycling team. Again, that's the 13th annual Bike in Movie and Bike Ride for Peace, Saturday, September 24th. The ride takes place from 4 to 6 p.m. and the movie will be at the Portland Hawthorne Hostel, 3031 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Zell's Cafe, a breakfast and brunch spot at 1300 Southeast Morrison Street, serving baked salmon Benedict, German waffles, and more. Becoming a member is easy when you call 877-500-5266 today to support KBOO.
And you're listening.